This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
You are listening to Bantering the Blue Shirts. This is take three of this week's episode. Believe it or not, we had some bandwidth issues the first time around. We had to redo that. Mike was wildly inappropriate at the beginning of the second attempt, and now we are on our third. So third time is the charm. My name is Joe Fortunato. I am your host. I am joined, as always, by my co-host,
chocolate bar eating Mike Murphy.
No, that's true. We talked in the first take about chocolate bars. Mike has one of those, you know, those world's finest chocolate bars that you can buy for a dollar. They come in a bunch of different flavors. Ah, we did that bit already. You guys didn't hear it, but we did it. The New York Rangers are 0-3.
0-3.
This one we have to do again.
Yep.
Is it surprising that Jesper Fast leads the Rangers in points?
Well,
is that the mark of an 0-3 team?
That is the mark of an 0-3 team. I mean, he's been playing well. I mean, credit to Jesper, but things have not gone well. The Rangers haven't played bad. You and I talked about how their best game was against the Predators. Buffalo was a game they really should have done better. And then I don't think anyone knows what the hell happened to poor Georgiev in Carolina. But I'm not really concerned though, because a little bit of turbulence like this at the beginning of the year is not at all surprising to me. Like, they were an up-and-down team in the preseason. There's a lot of, you know, trying to make Adam McQuaid a first-pairing defenseman, and he isn't really even the problem here, but there's just a lot of scrambling around with the team and a new coach, new system, new defensive zone coverage. Just a lot of little things that all signs point to a team that is going to stumble out of the gate like this, and that's what's happened.
It is a little surprising that, first of all, what we were talking about on the first take, the best the Rangers looked was against Nashville, which was clear and away the best team of the three that they played. I thought the Rangers could have easily won that game. They could have lost that game, too, and they did, but the officiating was awful. But the Rangers hung with Nashville, and there was this kind of overarching sense of, well, if that's what it's going to be, this year might not be that bad after all. And the Rangers pretty much dominated Buffalo. I don't think it's wrong to think that. The Rangers absolutely should have won that game. They didn't. It was a New York Rangers special. You can take Alain Vigneault out of the Rangers, but you can't take the Rangers out of dominating a game and somehow not winning. And the worst they looked was against Carolina. And I think there's going to be a lot of these high-scoring, maybe not 8-5, but 5-4, 4-3 games. And the defense just, it didn't look terrible against Nashville. It didn't look all that bad against Boston. It was absolutely dreadful against the Buffalo. Sorry, I did that in my head too, and I replaced it.
Take
Buffalo
four.
Somehow. Yeah, to redo the show for the fourth time. And I thought the Rangers were absolutely at their worst against Carolina. And Georgiev wasn't good in that game either, but the Rangers ran seven defensemen, and not one of them was a solid presence up and down. I mean, I think Anthony DeAngelo was probably one of the best defensemen on the ice in that game, and really that's all I can say in terms of positivity. I think McQuaid was awful. Yeah. Stahl was awful. Shea wasn't bad, actually. Shea was good,
Shattenkirk
too.
Shattenkirk got benched. That's fun.
Yeah, Shattenkirk only saw 8 minutes. We'll get to that. I don't want to get to that right now, but I do want to say Kevin Shattenkirk has 0 points in three games. So you have Fast with three and Shattenkirk with zero. Who could have expected that?
Well, D'Angelo had two primary points, or two primary assists, I should say, against
Yeah, he was, and so he looked really good. Like, there's really no reason that he should not be in this lineup.
I think that was really the case out of training camp,
so
out of the preseason, but I feel like he did more to earn the spot than Pionk, and we talked about that, and, like, Pionk has been... I know. Let's address Shattenkirk first, because that's what you asked. Yeah, Shattenkirk is... We had a lot of expectations for him. It's like, oh my god, he's got two kneecaps now. He should be a lot better than he was last season. And even last season, he wasn't really that bad. But it is... he did get held accountable by Quinn, which is interesting and important to note because he has a long history with Quinn, and it's also good to see, you know, I think a lot of people are encouraged to see that, you know, just kind of, oh, he's, it's equal across the board. It's not just the kids who are getting, you know, the punished by a lack of ice time. But I'm also, I'm one of those, I don't know, I don't pretend to be a hockey coach, Joe. I would like to think, like, you let a guy kind of work through his mistakes. And, like, the part where you address what's going on is more about the matchups and then after the game, like, get in the video room and talk about what happened as opposed to, you know, put him on the bench and make him watch in a game. Like, in a, what the hell did that game end up being, Joe? The final score is like 8-6 or something.
8-5.
Was it 8-5?
Yeah, I thought it was.
Yeah, it was 8-5. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, see, like, that?
That's the sort of game, I would want. I watched the game too. I just forgot. That's the sort of game I think Shattenkirk would.
I'm not totally sure you did, because based on the evidence, you didn't even know the final score. I think that's score one for.
It's 13 goals in the game.
Well, for a time, you thought there was 14. I rest my case, Your Honor.
You want me to talk about aphrodisiac foods again? Because we can do that. Start a new show.
Oh, damn it! Nobody knows what we're talking about now, though, so it's weird.
It's perfect.
Chocolate's an aphrodisiac. That's what brought that up in the first take.
Asparagus, by the way.
So is asparagus, gross. Because it's apparently suggestively shaped.
And it has vitamin B something.
It does.
And that'll make for aphrodisia.
Anywho, the reality of the situation, at least from a Shattenkirk standpoint, and I guess we could talk about it now because we're kind of talking about it. There's definitely players that deserve a benching on the defense more than Shattenkirk. I think pretty clearly Staal has been the abomination that we were worried he was going to be.
Yeah.
McQuaid has wavered from, I don't really notice him, to, oh my God, what happened? And oh my God, what happened was definitely against Carolina. I don't know if Quinn did it to Shattenkirk because Shattenkirk's a big name veteran on this team and it's a point that nobody's above the law. And if that's what it is, I support that. So long as this does not become a regular, oh, we're just going to keep throwing Mark Staal out there and let whatever happens, happens. A few people have speculated maybe Shattenkirk coming off the surgery and, you know, the long off season, they didn't want to run him into the ground on back-to-backs. But if that's the case, just put Tony D'Angelo into the lineup. There's no reason to run seven defensemen, which is what the Rangers did. So yeah. It feels a little too perfect that the Rangers had seven defensemen and Shattenkirk was taking a seat, to maybe there was a conversation behind closed doors like, hey, you're not playing well, and I'm definitely, or maybe after the game, hey, I knew you weren't playing well, you know, I hope this is a shot in the ass for you. And on the back end, Quinn was like, hey, we have D'Angelo, we can put him in the lineup and you know, use him as an actual defenseman, which is what happened. And hey, D'Angelo rewarded the Rangers with a fantastic performance. 2 points, 2 assists. I thought he looked really good with the man advantage. I think, and I guess we'll get into this in a bit too, Pionk has struggled a lot in these three games. He's done some good things. I think he's done some really, I don't know, bad may not be the right word, but he's definitely struggled. Yeah, and he's on the bottom end of the Rangers in terms of goals for percentage and possession.
Rocket Corsi. Yeah.
So he is by far and away the worst in relative Corsi. Granted, it's just three games, but he's gotten a lot of time on ice, and he hasn't really done anything with it.
Yeah, well, you tweeted about Pionk, and something I quote tweeted about you. It's a really simple observation, but I think it's something important to keep in mind, because it was also true last year, right after the trade deadline, and that, you know, that defense held together by, like, Elmer's glue and good intentions, is Pionk being paired with Mark Staal makes it really hard to evaluate what Pionk can do. And that's as true now as it was last year. And arguably, I think it's even more true now, because we're trying to get an idea of what he can do to help the team and what separates him, per se, from, you know, D'Angelo. What does D'Angelo bring to the table that Pionk doesn't? Because, like, we even saw, you know, Pionk start on the second power play unit. And over Brady Shea, which is kind of, you know, that in of itself is definitely worth scratching your head over, right? And the fact that he's at the bottom of the barrel in relative Corsi, and that, you know, he's been stuck on the pair with Mark Stahl, and that the numbers aren't good, and, you know, he's been on the ice for, you know, just not, it's not a good look for his goal differential. Right now he's 0-3 in terms of 5-on-5 through three games. Brett Howden is 2 goals for, 5 goals against, but I don't really have any complaints about Howden.
You shouldn't have any. We're going to have a whole compliment section for Howden at the end of this show.
Yeah, Kevin Shattenkirk, like Pionk, is also 0 goals for at 5-on-5 and 3 goals against at 5-on-5. So that is, you know, that's not, it's not what you want to see from Shattenkirk or Pionk. But it is interesting that Shattenkirk was the one who kind of got, you know, the leash pulled. You know what I mean? He was the one to get disciplined, and maybe that it's part of the message that Quinn is trying to send. But we, you know what, Joe, we've also seen him put a stamp on the team right away. In that second game, he scratched Nemesnikov in favor of Cody McLeod, and Nemesnikov certainly didn't do anything to like earn his spot, you know, or to hold on to his roster spot, but he's definitely been kind of free falling on the depth chart. And he had, I would say, like a mixed bag of a game in his return to the lineup against Carolina. He had, you know, he picked up a nice assist, but he also just blew a defensive assignment, which I gotta say is becoming a bit of a disturbing trend with Nemesnikov that I've noticed. Is he sometimes gets lost in defensive zone coverage, which is not what I expected to see from someone who had kind of encouraging possession numbers from what we saw in Tampa Bay, even when he was away from Stamkos and Kucherov. I've not been very happy with him, and I don't really have any issues with Quinn kind of waking him up and rattling his cage. I don't love the idea of McLeod getting into the lineup like he did for one game, but it is what it is. But the Shattenkirk thing is definitely worth examining and keeping an eye on, because he did dress the 7D. Tony D'Angelo played really well, and like pretty much everyone had a really bad game in terms of the Rangers D in transition and the defensive game. But you can't pretend that D'Angelo wasn't the best defenseman in terms of what he brought to the table in that third game of the season. Like I said, the 2 primary assists is pretty good. He made just a bunch of really smart plays, and he got involved late in the game with like a little fracas or whatever you want to call it, and that's also kind of what we expect from him. I'm not really counting that as a strike for or against him. It just is kind of something that happened. But you know, he had 4 penalty minutes, 2 points, you know, 2 hits, 3 giveaways, 1 takeaway, and a blocked shot, and he played 17-34, and he really kind of did what we think that Tony D'Angelo can do. He made a difference.
Yeah, I thought he was really good, and just to kind of jump into some of the things that you were talking about, I don't have an issue with Quinn trying to kind of rally the troops, if you will, and, you know, try to make a statement. Nemesnikov was obviously not playing that well. Quinn said it wasn't about Nemesnikov so much as trying to give Cody McLeod an opportunity because he was so good in preseason. I'm sure the truth lies somewhere between those two things. Obviously, yeah. McLeod, yeah, because Nemesnikov was bad. I'm sure Quinn didn't want to put him on blast. And McLeod was good in the preseason. And actually, in the one game, in the one game that he played against Buffalo, he only had 5 minutes, a little bit more on for even strength. But he was a 50% possession player. I mean, it's not, you know, there's nothing to shake your head at there. It's not like he was a complete disaster. What I do think, though, that I'm liking out of Quinn is we are seeing these instant adjustments. You know what I mean? It's not taking games to kind of figure this stuff out. Quinn is shaking up the lines. He's trying to figure out what he can. He's inserting guys into the lineup. Jake Reiser, who was one of the writers at Stanley Cup of Chowder when we brought him on to do the David Quinn extravaganza when the Rangers first hired Quinn, kind of talked to us a little bit about the fact that Quinn doesn't mind going 7 defensemen. He gets a little crazy at times, and I'm not hating what I'm seeing in terms of, oh, this is how he's going to make his adjustments. He's going to try X or he's going to try Y. And I like that. I like him getting a feel for it. Obviously, McLeod is playing is a bigger issue, and we haven't really seen an overhaul to the defense. I'm assuming that's going to come on Thursday. The Rangers don't play for close to a week, so I don't know how. I think Shattenkirk's going to be out there, obviously. I don't know how Staal hasn't gotten some type of an axe. Maybe he'll get one for that game. I'm not sure, but like Mike said, there is absolutely no reason D'Angelo should not be in this lineup. He has been fantastic in the one game that he's played plus the preseason, and far more noticeable than Pionk has been. So I think that plays into it a little bit. The Nemestikov thing is something to keep an eye on. Mike, you tweeted it out. If the Rangers do have aspirations to trade him, they need to be very careful with the way that they handle him.
Yeah, it's a story I'm working on right now for the banter.
A little bit of a teaser there.
Yeah, a little bit of a teaser. It's... You know, he just signed the 2-year deal for $4 million a year. And, you know, he's not, he's 25. And, you know, he came off of, you know, his most productive year by leaps and bounds last season. But we've talked about it a ton of times on the show. It's Kucherov and Stamkos. Playing with them is going to make you have a good time. And, Joe, you infamously predicted him as being a potentially 25 goal guy. You have since taking that back. God bless you. God bless your sweet.
Well, I need to throw something in here. I very rarely utilize this line of thinking, and I think I brought this up in the last podcast. Nemestikov seems somewhat uninterested out there. He's not engaged the way that I was expecting.
Joe, would you say he's playing lazy?
No, because I don't think lazy is a really negative.
But Joe, is he Russian, and you're saying he's...
He is Russian, and I am saying he's semi-uninterested. I do have to say, I think that he was far more active against Carolina than he was against Nashville. But the Rangers need more out of him. And listen, it has to be unbelievably difficult to go from a potential Stanley Cup contender to the bottom of the barrel New York Rangers. But Ryan Spooner is not having an issue with it. So, and plus, Nemestikov's on the fourth line. But the Rangers need him there. They need him there because they need Jimmy Vesey, at least for now, in the top six. And hey, let's talk about Jimmy, the dominant Vesey that we've seen these first three games. He had a pretty big issue finishing, but he finally potted two of them against Carolina. And listen, if that's the Jimmy Vesey we're going to get moving forward, I will heel turn faster than I did on Nemestikov.
No.
And be like, listen, this is the guy that...
Oh my goodness.
This is the guy that we need. But we've seen stints like this from VC before, and it's never been long term. I don't think Quinn is this wizard who can just snap his fingers and suddenly be the, you know, coach, the college coach whisperer and get more out of VC. I think VC is what VC is. Now, he's had a great first three games, but he's got to keep it up. And he has to finish, because against the Rangers could have easily beaten Nashville and Buffalo if he just finished his chances.
Yeah, well, the thing with to keep in mind with VC is, like, this is just peak Jimmy VC. He's scoring opportunistic goals. He's also missing chances. He knows the right neighborhood to be in because he's the guy who finishes chances. Like, that's what he's been as an NHL player. And I want to make this clear. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just not the most valuable skill set to have. And it makes him very much an expendable player in the greater scheme of things here, especially for an organization that is trying to develop its own scoring wingers. Like, make no mistake, VC is not great at creating zone offense. Even with, you know, an outstanding game against Carolina in terms of just production, he's in the red in terms of the goal differential. Again, we're talking just, you know, three games here, but he's also, you know, not doing everything he needs to do, especially in regards to possession. And, you know, I just had it up, Joe, and I lost it.
This is what happens when you ruin the podcast.
I didn't ruin anything. Oh, that's why it's different, Joe, because I was looking at natural stat trick instead of Corsica.
Yes. I told you that.
Yeah. I don't know why, maybe our listeners know, why are the numbers always different for...
Well, it's separate tracking data.
I know.
But so, then, yeah, so we can...
Corsica is the industry standard, and I get it. Anyway, VC is just below, you know, a clean zero in terms of relative Corsi 4, which is fine. But the thing that is noteworthy to me about him and his play is, like, if he didn't have... If he had one goal instead of two, would we be kind of as excited about his start as we are? And I don't know if he really would be. And the other thing is, like, oh, but he could have had so many more goals by now. And he really could have had, like... Jimmy VC could very easily have something like four or five goals right now. Turns out he just has the two, which is still really good. Especially, you know, the Rangers have... You know, a nice way to put it is a bunch of guys who are still kind of looking to make their mark in offense. And, you know, as we already mentioned, Shattenkirk with 0 points is not the sort of start we want to see. But again, it's three games. I'm not worried. I'm not excited about VC. I'm not just trying to rain on his parade or anything like that. But he is shooting 18.2%, Joe. And
the VC situation is an interesting one because in my notes after the game against Nashville, I kind of made VC a pro and a con. He was a pro because he was playing, he was active, things were happening, he was getting opportunities and, you know, banging away at rebounds and all the things that VC's really good at. The con was that he didn't finish. And if VC's going to play on the second line, he has to finish. And
yeah,
he's on the second line because he can't really go on to the fourth line. Even with Nemestikov, you would have to put Nemestikov at center and then VC and Fast on the wings, right? And then you'd have to figure out where everybody else goes. And you're kind of moving centers around. And are you keeping Hedel as a center in that situation? You know, what are you doing with Howden? And there's just a lot there. So it's easier for VC to be on that second line and just kind of let everything fall down. But if he's going to be there, he has to finish. So if he doesn't finish, if he doesn't finish, he's not doing what the Rangers need him to do. And again, not a knock on VC. VC is a great depth player. It's just that there's a lot of people who genuinely believe VC is a potential 40 goal scorer, and he's not. He's just not.
No. I don't want to make this clear. I feel like I almost came down too hard on VC.
Mike is backtracking a little bit now.
I feel like Nemestikov has been a dramatic disappointment, whereas VC is just, he's VC. It's fine. He's playing right now. He's playing towards, like, approaching what is the upper end of really the sort of form we want to see from him. He's doing what he has to do. More chances are going to come. He's going to finish more chances. And he's going to finish the year approaching 20 goals. That's what he is.
Yeah.
It's fine.
I think it's totally fine.
Especially on a team where, you know, some of the guys are still searching for, you know,
points. Anything?
Yeah, searching for chances. I mean, Buch has been...
I think Buchnevich has been one of the Rangers' best players.
Think he might be the best player.
It's very possible. Two goals. He's had a couple of grade-A setups that have not been finished.
He was unbelievable in the preseason. Like, truly
monsterish
in the preseason. And so far, he has the two goals, like you said. And, you know, he is also... I think he has 2 goals and 6 shots, but it's the plays that he's making to create the offense that separates him from VC to me. He's doing the sort of things that make the difference in terms of generating those chances, and he's doing it despite seeing through 3 games a little bit less ice time than VC has.
Well, there are different types of goal scorers, and there's different types of offense creation, and VC does not create offense. VC finishes. VC is not a sniper. VC is a dirty goal scorer. He's around the net. He's banging home rebounds. VC is not somebody who's going to drive into the zone with the puck, you know, dish it off to somebody for a great goal. That's not his bread and butter. His bread and butter is literally sitting in front of the net and then just finishing whatever comes around, maybe getting, like, his second goal against Carolina. He finished a beautiful pass, and the net was wide open. That's what Jimmy VC is. Pavel Buchnevich is a creator, right? He's like an architect. He moves the puck around. He sets guys up. He can score on his own. He's somebody you want with the puck when he's entering the zone. There's not a ton of those guys on the Rangers. Like, Kreider is probably more of a finisher than he is a creator. The reason, the difference between Kreider and Vesey is Kreider's really fast and a really good goal scorer. So and Kreider can take the puck in the neutral zone, right, and drive past somebody and create his own breakaway. Zibanejad, I think, is kind of a dual threat. He creates his own offense. Yeah, Hedl looks like he can create his own offense. It's amazing, and that's actually great.
He looks like he can create offense for the people around him. He's the sort of guy who makes the players around him better.
The generic response was, oh, Hayes and Zuccarello can feed Vesey and he'll be scoring all day. No, that's not, Vesey doesn't operate that way.
No.
Zuccarello needs a finisher.
Yeah, he needs someone who has a shot like a Zibanejad. He needs
right, or even Hayes. Hayes works well on that line because of it, and Vesey may succeed and has succeeded by just existing in their atmosphere of, hey, we'll create the offense and, you know, you clean up the mess. That's worked for them to this point. Mm-hmm. But you need to be careful about the way that you just look and you sort by goals and you say, oh, Vesey scores maybe 20 goals. He'll fit with anybody. That's not – it has to work. It's the same way that, you know, Gabrick and Richards and Nash all didn't work together because they're three – all three of them needed the puck to be successful.
Yeah, they're all great
and
players.
And Zuccarello doesn't want the puck on his stick for more than a second. Hayes has the puck on his stick forever, and Vesey really doesn't need the puck on his stick at all. So they do kind of work.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean – I don't think that's a problem. I just there needs to be a little bit more finish with VC. And we got it against Carolina, and like I said, there have been strings of games like this for him before where he's looked like a player that's special. But far more often they're followed by, you know, streaks
of
lineup? Not being that good. So Mike, KZB, Buchnevich clearly the best of the bunch. Until Carolina, I didn't really notice Kreider was bad against Nashville. I think he was whatever against Buffalo. Zibanejad only has one assist through three games. I mean, Buchnevich is carrying that line right now. What are your thoughts there? Quinn, keep it together? Break it up? Is it too early to be talking about this?
It's too early.
Don't tell me it's too early on my goddamn podcast.
It's our podcast. Don't say that.
On our podcast.
That's so rude. Yeah, I'm not too worried. I feel like KZB is, we already know it works. That's the thing here. And I wouldn't mind Quinn shaking things up. The problem is I don't want him to shake things up by throwing VC on the first line or doing something like, if he wants to shake it up by throwing Hedl up there and just like, oh, let's give a kid, you know, and really who are the kids in the lineup now? The guys we can actually call kids, you know, it's Hedl and Howden and Lettieri. Do we want Howden in the top six? No. Like, all right, well...
Can we just hit the timeout button for a second there?
Timeout you.
Howden's looked goddamn good.
He's looked good.
Like...
possession numbers aren't great, but he's doing everything he needs to do.
Goddamn good. His, you know, face-off has been fine. He's been winning a lot of face-offs. He's putting up points. He's creating a lot of offense. You're right. His possession numbers aren't...
They're very bad.
Brett Howden's possession numbers are really good. What does Natural Stat Trick have?
Oh, hold on, folks. Insert.
In fact, I didn't think they were this good. He is like one of the leaders in possession. It's Shea and it's Howden. And then Shattenkirk, actually, ironically enough.
Oh, yeah. I was wrong.
Did you have the columns sorted the wrong way?
I maybe did.
Well, regardless of Mike's foolishness, Howden has been...
I was about to say, Howden, like, he's impressed me because he's been... Like, I was going to say, I don't understand why the possession numbers aren't good because the eye test for him has been great. He has two primary points, and the thing that stands out to me is he's really... I've noticed him in every game so far, which is important to me because he's only getting 13 minutes of ice time a game. And when you're, like... When you're a kid like him, this is his first taste of NHL action ever. Remember, you know, this is a really young player, and he's 20. We weren't expecting him to make it in the lineup, let alone end up being, you know, the fourth line center right now. And he's doing all these little things that are really, really promising. And with each game, he's actually gotten a little more ice time. And I'm sure everyone has stopped listening to me when I mixed up his possession numbers with Hayes's, but I know, bear with me, folks, I had chocolate.
But he's been so good that he kind of looks like Hayes, we kind of expected Hayes to look like.
Yeah, he's been really, really good, and like you said, he's just shy of 59% on faceoffs. I thought kids weren't supposed to be good at faceoffs, Joe.
He's well. I did not expect him to be this good, and I think it is kind of changing the discussion about necessarily what the like. He got power play 1 minute against Carolina.
I like Brett Howden. I liked Brett Howden. I remember
Quinn is using him like this is this is far more interesting than I thought it was going to be.
I agree. Because, that's where I was going with that.
Yeah. And that's the other problem that Howden is involved with right now is that the man ahead of him on the depth chart is Hedl. Yeah, and Hedl looks just out of this world good.
And that's this goes back to what I was saying before is I'd rather if you shake up that KZB, which is how we got here, like Howden is great, but I would love to keep him in that bottom six role to like not to set like the sky as his ceiling and like I also think you can reward him, and he has been rewarded by getting more ice time and getting, you know, a taste of power play, and all that stuff is good, right? That's all part of the process and building the confidence of a young player. But if you want to shake up that first line, I feel like the big picture thing to do is Hedl. Just throw him up there and, you know, the whole point is I'd rather see him in that spot than VC move up to the first line, because like you, I don't want VC on the second line, let alone the first line. But yeah, everything we've seen from Howden has been exceeding expectations and good news, and you know, we were all really kind of hoping that he was going to be a guy who we all knew he would be an NHL player. And you know, we talked a lot in the summer about, "Oh, what's his ceiling?" And you know, heading into camp, he had such a good performance at Traverse City. He was really noticeable. He had a very good preseason. He had a great camp. And to see him have this sort of start with two primary points in his first three games playing as a fourth line center is not much more you can ask from a kid. Oh, you know what it was, Joe? I just remembered what it was. It was the...
Tell me.
It was the goal differential. That's what I got wrong.
Oh, you were looking... Well, he is a... And I hate using this statistic. No, he was a minus three, so...
Goal differential is nothing without the context around it. You have to understand the circumstance of it. Like, if you look at the fourth liners throughout the league, no one's going to have a good goal differential unless you're on a team that has, like, the best fourth line in the world. When the fourth line is out there, things are not always going to go well. Because it's very important to remember, well, who is Howden playing on the fourth line? So, you know, one night it was Cody McLeod, another night, you know, it's Lateri and Nemestikov, and you know it's not quite the same as being, you know, on the ice with guys like Zuccarello and Zibanejad.
Right. It's a good barometer for if a guy has really terrible possession numbers, say, but his goal four percentage is great, you would utilize that and say, okay, his shots are coming from the outside, they're not coming in dangerous areas. I mean, there's other variables too. Maybe Henrik Lundqvist is just standing on his head while whoever this mystery player is on the ice. But the reality of the situation is Howden has been easily one of the biggest bright spots for the New York Rangers. And I think saying something. And the Rangers are getting a lot out of him. Quinn is using him the way that we would want. Nothing has happened. Even McLeod going into the lineup, and I meant to talk about this sooner, but I'll really bring it up now. Even with McLeod going into the lineup, it didn't come at the expense of a kid. It came at the expense of Nemestikov. So from a development standpoint, the players you want are playing good minutes. They're getting good roles. I mean, what else can you ask for from Quinn at this point?
Asparagus, I guess.
Oh, yeah, that's because it's suggestive. But really, what else? You can't ask for anything. I think he's done everything we've wanted him to do.
I don't know. It's way early. I've seen a lot, and I've seen it a lot from you, mister. And you know I love you to bits. But everyone is very quick to celebrate Quinn and, you know, the process and all that, but like, it's early.
It is 100% early, and that's kind of been an argument that people.
There've also been some signs of like, oh, maybe, you know, like, did he do a good job kind of settling the team down when things were falling to shit against Carolina? And you know, I, by the way, I completely support and am with the you leave Georgiev in there. You have to.
Oh, 100%. You don't waste Lundqvist.
It's the right thing to do. It's the right thing to let a young goalie experience that, especially like he's not completely green. He's, you know, let him work through it, let the defense work through it. But the whole idea of, like, you know, it's there've been a couple of moments where it's like, okay, benching Shattenkirk, like, that much to me is like, oh, that was surprising. Not necessarily a negative, but there are a lot of little things where I'm like, okay, I'm not building, like, a paper mache head of David Quinn and making a little shrine in my room just yet. We're not there yet. It's
No, but I have to say, my response to that is, you're three games into the season. Yeah. There have been multiple opportunities, especially at 0-3, for absolutely panic results. And we haven't gotten it. So, from the three games that I've had to judge him, he didn't insert Cody McLeod in the lineup for a kid. Yes, he's not playing D'Angelo. I think that's a much bigger issue. He finally got him into the lineup as a seventh defenseman. I think we're going to have a really good idea on Thursday of what that means, because I doubt he's going seven defensemen again. But I will celebrate the little victories right now, because we were not getting them under the previous regime.
You know who hurt me. Alain Vigneault hurt.
I like Quinn using his timeout and blasting into the team. I think Quinn is, at this point, everything that you could ask of Quinn, you've gotten. Now, the judgment on Quinn will continue to evolve as the team goes from a rebuilder back into contention. But for right now, for what we're dealing with, I have no complaints. I didn't want McLeod in the lineup. He played for Nemestikov. Fine, I can swallow that. That's not an issue. I have seen the Rangers make some adjustments. There's still a lot of confusion as the Rangers go from the man-to-man to the zone defense, and that's to be expected. But I think we should celebrate the little victories, at the very least, while we can. But again, we would have looked at AV putting McLeod into the lineup and with our hands up and screaming, oh my God, how could this happen? That's absolutely true. But probably because he would have come into the lineup for Hedl. And that's a problem.
The fact that he's and there that did at not all happen. Is a problem. It's
yeah, but that now who do you blame that on? Because that's the next argument. Do you blame Gordon or do you blame Quinn?
I think you
because I blame both him. Of them. I blame Quinn for using him, but at some point the general manager needs to realize this guy doesn't need to be in both. The lineup.
It's first of all, it's a question of do we need to blame rather than understand? Like understanding the decision is more important than blaming it, right? And that is to me is even at the town hall event. They, you know, Gorton explained that, you know, as a GM, he has a lot more say in what the lineup looks like than, you know, we may have seen 10 or 20 years ago or whatever the hell. And you really get that impression, especially with elements like McLeod. And because we heard, you know, we heard the Rangers talk about, yeah, we want a guy to protect the kids, and Gorton believes that. And That is all what it is, and that's a philosophy question, and rather than, it's a lot more difficult to wrap your head around, because it's all intangible stuff, right? And a perfect example of this, Joe, is Cody McLeod on the team, Philip Hedl, headshot. Like, is this a lesson anyone will ever learn?
Well, yeah, enforcers don't deter anything.
It just doesn't, like,
And that's the other thing, and not to get into this, McLeod isn't even a good enforcer.
No, he's 34.
Forget his age, he's not even a good enforcer. He's not even a good fighter.
No, but that's my point, is he, up until, like, the past couple of seasons, excluding the most recent season, when he was not really a mainstay in Nashville's lineup before becoming a Ranger, like, he was the most prolific fighter, meaning he had the most fights for a couple of years. And I only know that because I wrote a piece about how the Rangers' fighting trend was down. And then literally, like, 3 days later, the Rangers picked McLeod up. So it was just like, oh, okay. But it is, I feel like it's a case of he's 34. Guys in that role, I feel like, burn out fast, and he's been around a really long time for a modern day kind of enforcer. And I feel like I don't like to even, it's not my favorite thing to do in the world to be like, yeah, he can't fight well, because, like, I'm not very pro fighting in general. I understand why it happens when emotions flare up. I hate stage fighting more than anything else. But I just don't understand what you're trying to accomplish that you can't accomplish with, like, turning in a great shift and hustling to beat out an icing or, you know, a nice, clean, big hit or whatever the hell, rather than stopping the game to have a bare-knuckle boxing match. But I know there's plenty of people who strongly disagree with me, and that's absolutely fine. But McLeod is... The thing that stands out to me is he's been in so many fights over his career that I'm not sure he is effective in that role, and I think that's relevant because I'm not sure players around the league who might be tough, like a tough guy in their lineup, look at him with any reverence or fear. You know,
well, it's clear there's not even a punishment coming.
Yeah, and that's the... I don't know. Like, it is really frustrating, though, because you have to ask yourself, like, is there a way to address what happens on the ice without resorting to an enforcer role? And what does that look like, right? Does the game need to be policed by players? And very recently, it's kind of relevant. I don't know if we touched on this, but Tom Wilson got, you know, a 20-game suspension. And that is...
Deservedly so.
And that is really significant because he is a repeat offender. And the hit in question, it wasn't even like on the top five dirtiest plays of his career, but it was an effort by the NHL to say, listen, enough is enough. It's time for you to get a message sent to you. And that 20-game suspension is going to cost him $1 million in salary. And I think that's more important, really, than that's the best deterrent there is. And the problem is, like, up until now, it's been very hard to trust the process because guys would get just, you know, a little slap on the wrist and they'd be back out on the ice after a couple of games for, you know, blowing someone up or, you know, ending someone's career. Like, you know, every once in a while, Joe, I look at, like, the Rangers roster and I look back at, you know, especially the evolution of the defense and Mike Sauer every time. It just makes you shake your head. What could have happened?
Yeah, imagine it would have been very different, and there's no use crying over spilled milk, but...
Yeah. It's just a shame, though.
It's a shame from, like, a human standpoint because I don't think he can live, like, a normal life as far as we know. But also the fact that the Rangers lost a very good defenseman who could have definitely been the difference maker on those teams. I don't know how old he is now. I'm not sure he would be helpful now. But, yeah, definitely one of the sadder things that had occurred. The Rangers as a whole, I think, have done a lot of really good things these first three games. I think they've done a lot of expected things, which are bad, but things that we expected. And yeah. I'm not shocked the Rangers are 0-3. I'm a little surprised about a few things, but I think some of the questions are going to get into that, so I don't want to go too deep into it. Mike, did we miss anything? Anything else you want to talk about before we get into the questions?
No, we talked about Booch being good. I didn't mean to go on a whole tangent there with the role of the enforcer, but it is kind of relevant, especially when we examine, you know, Quinn's philosophy and stuff. But, yeah, like, you know, like we said, there was no alarming surprises. We knew the defense was going to be really bad, right? But at the same time, it's been... I feel like it's going to be important for this team to just kind of forget about what happened in Carolina, right? And you've said it a couple times in the show already, is let's see what the Rangers look like on Thursday. And that's what I really want to see specifically out of Quinn, is kind of that returning from adversity, returning from a game where things just kind of absolutely spiraled out of control. And that's what I'd like to see happen. I'd like to see a nice thing happen.
Well, there you go. Questions. Michael Silver's asked two questions. We'll allow him to do both of them.
Well, he's a patron. He gets to do what he wants.
Yeah, he is a patron. Patreon.com/BlueShirtBanter. What are the most encouraging signs that you've seen from both players and coaches despite the 0-3 record?
Sauer is 31, by the way, Joe.
Oh, he is? Well, he's younger than I thought he was. How many years ago did he get hurt?
His last NHL action was 2011-2012.
Wow. Time goes fast, man. I was just out of college back then. Ah, the good old days.
Think about how much asparagus you've eaten since.
No, I love asparagus. There's some great asparagus recipes out there. A little salt, pepper, garlic powder, if you want to be really simple. A little heavy cream and Parmesan cheese, if you want to be a little fancy. Hoof.
Look at you. Fancy boy.
It's great.
Michael Silver's question...
I had one more recipe that I was going to give out, but you've ruined that.
Well, I don't want to keep him waiting. He's a good boy.
What are the encouraging signs you've seen, Michael?
My biggest thing is the kids, because my whole... I've said this before, and I've already written it a bunch, is I just want this to be a year for evaluation for guys who are can be a part of, like, long-term, specifically guys like Kevin Hayes and figuring out what the hell happens with his contract, but also development. And if we're looking at the kids, like, Lettieri has been fine. He's not the most important prospect in the organization by a long shot. D'Angelo, just one game, that's fine. Pionk is maybe the biggest, like, letdown, but again, he's stapled at the hip to Mark Stahl, and it's important not to hold that against him. That doesn't give him just, like, a clean, you know, excuse, and we just have to ignore what the analytics say on him, but it is important to be like, okay, well, the context of it, what's going on? And Howden and Hedl have been absolutely great. And Booch, I know, is not a prospect anymore, but he's a young player who's going to be a part of this team and a big contributor when they're rebounding from the rebuild, has been fantastic. So I like it a lot. Oh, you know what? And you can say Georgiev has had a, you know, just a dog shit game, but that is what it is.
Yeah, it was his only game, but a dog shit game nonetheless. I'll be decisive. I think I liked what I've seen out of Quinn through the first three games, despite the Rangers being 0-3. I think Lundqvist has looked really good. There was a lot of concern about that from the preseason. We didn't really talk about him. He was spectacular both against Buffalo and Nashville.
He's already made like eight highlight reels.
8 million high danger saves.
He's fine. Everything's
fine. Shattenkirk is a concern. Not a panic, but just, hey, he's not playing well. And I think that's important. Hayes has not been as good as I expected, but again, not bad. Just he's been Kevin Hayes. Hedl, Buchnevich, really, really good. Howden, exceptionally good. D'Angelo, very good. Pionk, kind of a disappointment. So that's where I am on that. Michael Silvers again. Would you have preferred Shattenkirk to have been scratched versus Carolina as more of a precautionary measure instead of getting 8 minutes? Time on ice, which could have gone to someone else, and you can keep the 12-6. 12 forward, 6 defensemen. How would you approach back-to-backs moving forward? Is Shattenkirk, did he get that little time because he was hurt or because it was a precautionary measure? Because I feel like if that was the result, they just would have not played him.
Yeah, I didn't hear anything specific.
Neither did I. I wonder if Mike is kind of inferring. I would have definitely benched him, like healthy scratched him, and played, you know, regular 12 and 6 lineup. I don't think that would have been damaging at all. I think we kind of forget the fact that D'Angelo came in for Lettieri, and we didn't really talk about him at all, but he's it's hard to make an impression on the fourth line. I get it. But I think back-to-backs moving forward, if you have to, I don't know how long the Rangers are going to keep up 8 defensemen, because Claesson has to get into the lineup eventually. What's the benefit of having all 8 of them up here? Honestly, what happens? And right now, the only outcome that I can see occurring that kind of solves everything is, Pionk isn't playing well, we'll put him down to the minors because he's waiver exempt. But that's the only thing that I can think of. So I don't know what the solution on the defense is going to be. But moving forward, the Rangers didn't lose because they ran 7 defensemen. And if you're going to do it with anyone, you may as well have D'Angelo, because he can kind of float in as one of those offensive forwards. But I think D'Angelo has been good enough that he doesn't need the kind of charade of being the 7th defenseman.
I have a question for you in the middle of our question.
I have an answer.
Oh. Do we see Frederik Claesson soon, Joe?
I don't know. Where do you put him? Who are you taking out?
I have no idea.
If it was this difficult to get D'Angelo into the lineup
after the preseason that he had.
Right. What happens? You know what I mean? If it was this hard to get D'Angelo into the lineup, who are you taking out now to get Claesson in? Are you taking out Pionk and you're running 7 defensemen again?
Also, you know what? There is something I blame Quinn for, is McQuaid on the first pair.
We 100 million percent. This McQuaid-Stahl thing seems to continue to be, we can't, we can't avoid this. What are we supposed to do? And McQuaid wasn't terrible against Nashville. McQuaid is not a top pair defenseman.
No, and he hasn't even been like he hasn't been a disaster by any stretch of the imagination. He's been like fine in terms of what we expect from him. The issue here is that, you know, he is what he is, and like I feel like there's maybe what's so important to me is there could be a missed opportunity to find something else that works. Like right now, McQuaid is, you know, north of, he's 2.11 relative Corsi 4. I keep looking at natural stat trick when I should look at Corsica. And that's, you know, that's encouraging, but I think it's really important to point out that very, very quietly, Joe, Brady Shea has been very good.
And that's another thing that
that's big to be
that we could definitely talk about. That contract, and again, we're 3 days deep. He's been exactly what the Rangers have wanted him to be. So
he doing good.
Brady, but yes, yeah, so you want to. But let me ask you this question,
happy
Mike.
For Brady Shea.
Let me throw you the devil's advocate on the Quinn criticism that you just
I knew you'd be the devil.
Lobbed out there. You son
You've
of a bitch.
Been the devil.
You move McQuaid off the top pair. Who's your top pair?
I don't get paid enough for those sort of decisions.
Who is the top pair? You going Shea Shattenkirk? Because that's what I would do.
That's probably what I would do.
All right. You go Shea Shattenkirk. Now what do you do?
Well, then you have to do... Well, listen. I don't pretend to know, Joe. I'm just like...
Well, I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I'm saying...
I appreciate that. Like
your lack of an answer is why this is so hard.
I know that.
Because it's Stahl, McQuaid... D'Angelo, Pionk.
I would do, honestly, Flayson. I would do second pair. I would do
Smith would have to be there, right?
I would do Smith and almost certainly D'Angelo at this point.
Okay.
Because I'm crazy like that.
I don't think that's stupid.
I would have Stahl McQuaid as the third pair. That doesn't matter.
I would definitely do Pionk McQuaid. But you're, like, as difficult as it is to figure out what Pionk is with Stahl, you're not going to figure that out any quicker with McQuaid.
Or if Pionk is the 7th D or if he's in
Hartford. Right, and Clay, you know, Clayson is still Clayson. I'm just saying it's difficult. It's easier to separate Shea and Shattenkirk.
Yeah. I'm just to be clear, I was picking a realistic pairing in terms of the thing, like the right thing to do would be to scratch Mark Stahl at this point. Scratch Mark Stahl over McQuaid, frankly, because McQuaid hasn't played in a way to suggest that he should be scratched, whereas I feel like Mark Stahl has. Just in terms of the eye test, I feel like Stahl's been the worst D. Pionk is not too far behind him, but the difference here is that there's a future with Neil Pionk for this team, and that is not really true of Mark Stahl after his contract expires.
I think that's very fair.
He's a lame duck. That is what it is.
Matthias... Pietraszewski? I don't even
apologies.
Know where to go.
Your name sounds lovely. I wish Joe could pronounce it.
Yes, I wish I could speak just general English. Thoughts about New York Rangers playing 7D? We kind of said that. Seems like they all got decent minutes against the Hurricanes, except for Shaddy. It might be the only way for both Pionk and D'Angelo to be able to get playing time, since they ain't going to sit Stahl or McQuaid. The last point, Mike, do you think the only way to get Pionk and D'Angelo into the lineup, barring injury, is to go 7 defensemen?
It's not the only way. It's probably the most realistic way under Quinn, knowing what we do about him from Jake and the way he, you know, kind of does what he wants. But I feel like there has to be pressure from their front office. Like, I feel like it feels weird to me, Joe. I feel like this is just kind of like a clickbait of a statement, but like I feel like it's more likely we'll see Shattenkirk scratched than Mark Stahl. And the reason
we've already kind of seen Shattenkirk get
but that's but I mean like truly scratched in a manner which would allow both Pionk and D'Angelo to be in the lineup and to play significant minutes, because Mark Stahl has been a very good soldier for this organization. He's been through a lot. He's been here a very long time. You know, it's him and Hank in terms of who's been here the longest. And I don't think... And he still has 2 years left on his contract after this year, which is not great, but it is what it is. That's what happens when you sign a defenseman to not a good contract. And that is very disappointing that that's the case, but I also feel like he's kind of not going to leave the lineup unless he really forces the organization's hand. And we've seen him play a lot worse than this and stick around. But then again, we have a new coach, so I don't know. I don't know, Joe.
I don't know either, Michael. Den Monic, what are the odds Chris Kreider is one of the sell-offs at the deadline this year?
Oof,
that's a great question.
That is a good one.
I would say 35%.
Whoa!
Not just enough that there's a chance that it happens, but not enough that it's likely.
I'm going to say it's 36%.
Okay, you're a son of a bitch.
Ba-da-ba-da.
Kyle Brandow, do you think that running seven defensemen will be a long-term strategy going forward? I like that it gives both time to D'Angelo and Pionk, but I'd really like it if they just took out either Stahl or McQuaid at this point, even though they probably won't. I cannot imagine, especially when Bielski gets back, that running seven defensemen is going to be a regular occurrence.
No, I don't think so.
It's too complicated.
I want to go back for just a second and give more of an answer to that Kreider question, because it was such a good question. It is very interesting that he was named an alternate captain. I think that's a positive sign towards where he is. He's 27. He's got this year and next year left on his deal, and then he's a UFA. The other thing about Kreider is that he is definitely an attractive asset at the deadline.
Like, would garner a ton of things.
Yeah, he would be... Like, I know I've said it 100 times. I'll say it 100 times more. A team like Edmonton, you know, a team like even, you know, Calgary or Winnipeg, someone who wants to add some more depth, some speed, a guy who can play tough. Kreider checks off so many boxes. He's so appealing. You know, he's proven that, you know, he's the sort of guy you get the feeling like, oh, he's just the right line mates away from being like a 35 goal scorer. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying that's exactly the case for him, but I feel like he gives off that perception. I feel like that's the profile he has right now. And because of that, the Rangers would be stupid not to listen to offers. I don't think that means he's more likely than not to be traded, especially because Zuccarello is a pending UFA, and we have to know what happens with Hayes. But like, I feel like if Hayes signs an extension, the odds of Kreider being moved go up.
Yeah, you got to make room somehow. But I don't know. Who do you think gets more at the deadline, Kreider or Hayes? Probably Kreider, I guess, because he signed for another year. Yeah,
Kreider because he signed for another year. But
on that sweet contract.
Yeah, that sweet-ass contract. But then again, Hayes is a center, and teams always pay a little extra for centers. Their thing is, if the Rangers move all three of those guys, Zouk, Kreider, and Hayes, they're going to bring back... Like, if you thought this past year's draft was fun...
Yeah, wait till that one.
Yeah, that'll be numerous first-round picks in coming back.
Numero uno picos.
Anyway, I just wanted to touch on that. What was the question...
Well, do you think running seven defensemen will be a long-term strategy?
Probably not. The short answer is probably not. And the reason for that is it's unconventional. You have to kind of justify it. I think the strongest thing, you know, that would lend that to a reality or make that happen is the fact that, like we said, like, when the hell do we see Frederick Claesson? The Rangers are carrying the 8D. And so that is... kind of surprising. They also really should be playing D'Angelo. They can't not be doing it, but I'm worried that's just what's going to happen here, is they'll choose to scratch D'Angelo instead of Adam McQuaid, which just makes the Adam McQuaid trade more frustrating, and Stahl contract and whatever. But the McQuaid, the reason we grumble about McQuaid more often, especially on Twitter, I think, is because, like,
he didn't need to be here.
He just didn't need to be here. He hasn't done anything wrong while he's been here, but...
He didn't need to be here. I mean, I got news for you. I will scorch the earth if D'Angelo is scratched against...
Scorch the earth!
On Thursday. I will, against San Jose.
Will you salt the earth, too, so crops can't grow?
No, because we need crops to eat, Michael.
If scorch the earth, that'll put more nutrients into the soil, Trev.
Jamie Bussold, Hey guys, keep up the good work. We love you, Jamie. You always compliment us.
Jamie.
Do you think Zook looks a step slower this year? And do you think with the start we've had, at some point some of the players like Shaddy or Smith will become available? I think Smith is available right now. I think there's a little bit of discussion that I wasn't prepared for, that Shattenkirk may be available.
Yeah, Shattenkirk is definitely interesting. He has a 10-team no-trade list for this year and next year. I'm just looking at this now on Cap Friendly so that I'm accurate. And in his third season, he has an 8-team no-trade list. So it's a modified no-trade and a no-movement. So you can't stash him in the HL, which would never happen anyway. But he is a super attractive asset to trade if you can trade him. The bottom line, especially with the trade the Rangers made for McQuaid, is like, Shattenkirk's really fun. He wants to be here. He loves the Rangers. The front office loves him. But he was the biggest free agent signing of the offseason before the Rangers figured out they have to blow this up. He's kind of like this, you remodeled your whole house and you have one bathroom where like the tiles in it look like they're from 1965. Like, it doesn't fit.
What do you do with that? Can't do anything with it.
And there's a bunch of friends you have who are all like, I'd give anything to have those tiles from 1965. And you're like, well, he does only have the one knee. But yeah, it's really tricky with Shaddy. I feel like if you can move him, you kind of have to, right? It's especially because of this logjam, and because you also have, you know, some kids who, they might not be ready this year, guys like Libor, but they can be ready next year. And that's not pressuring them to be ready next year, but you can definitely find some guys to plug in there. And Mark Stahl is a pain in the ass to get rid of. Brennan Smith, I feel like he still has to do a lot more work, I think, to kind of just rebuild his reputation. I feel like we'll have a much better idea of what's going on after 20 games or so, but again, he's a guy who can play the right side and the left side. He can skate, he's physical, and has a $4.35 million cap hit. There are teams out there that will want that. It would be nothing but a huge win if the Rangers went from demoting him to Hartford and putting him on waivers last year to letting him rebuild his reputation, work himself up to an NHL player again, and then trading him this year. That would be a slam dunk of a win. But it wouldn't be surprising to me if one of those two guys goes, Joe, because...
I mean, if you could do it, yeah. And I'm not totally sure that's something the Rangers are going to be able to do, but I agree with you. I wouldn't be shocked if it happened.
If the opportunity is there, you have to look into
it. Yeah, you have to take listens on everything. You have to. Nancil Gata. Sorry if I got your name wrong. Why isn't Mark Stahl rested more, especially when two games are back-to-back? I know, beginning of the season. I don't know. And that's the other thing. We're talking about Shattenkirk. Shattenkirk's 29. He could handle the back-to-back. You're doing the whole Mark Stahl thing, and I don't necessarily think that running Mark Stahl like that helps anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's 2 years
If down. You're going to go down that road, if that's the point that you're going to make, that, hey, listen, the reason that we have him here like this is because we need to make sure that he's rested. Well, don't you think resting Stahl is more important than resting Shattenkirk?
I do, Joe.
So do I. You know the answer.
I also want to point out Shattenkirk is, you know, he's played 3 games now. He played a couple games in the preseason, but those games in the preseason were his first like real hockey games in half a year. Like,
yeah,
I'm not surprised he looked rusty and kind of crappy.
Yeah, I agree,
and I don't think Quinn should be either.
So, and that's why I think there may have been like a wink-wink conversation between the two of them.
Yeah, a little winkety-wink-wink.
Little winkety-wink. James Dangles.
James Dangles.
I'm concerned Stahl won't be scratched in favor of Pion Clayson or Anthony DeAngelo because of the A on his sweater. Quinn was quoted as saying, Mark Stahl will be the alternate captain for all 82 games. He's been a liability in all 3 games and previously. I would 100% agree with that. Stahl's the de facto captain right now. Period. End of story. So,
Hank.
Well, but yes, I agree with you, Jim. I don't think.
Jim.
I think that's a concern. Fiscal Jesus.
Well said, by the way, Dangles. That's like a the fact that Stahl has that level of prestige, that's why I was saying Shattenkirk's more likely to be sitting in the press box than Stahl is, because he carries this kind of intangible weight and value to the team. He's not quite the face of the franchise, obviously, but he is just kind of this, he has a lot of reverence around him, and a lot of respect that, like, I'm not saying he doesn't deserve those things, I just think those things don't necessarily matter when you're trying to rebuild. Like, they don't matter, even a little bit.
Yeah. I agree with that. Next question. Updates on the play of all the rookies still with the team. Who's looked the best? Who do you think has more to show? I mean, Pionk has more to show. The best. D'Angelo's played well.
Georgiev has more to
show. Yeah, Georgiev. Not a rookie. Kind of forgot that he's a rookie. Well, whatever. He kind of counts. I would say Howden is the best just from an expectation standpoint, but Howden, Hedl have to be up there.
But Hedl is just magic.
Yeah, Hedl is magic. But again, we were expecting good things from Hedl.
We expected magic. We're getting magic. From Howden, I just expected, I wanted him to be like, oh, look, he can definitely do this fourth line role and he can be a little bit better than that. But he really looks like, oh, this kid can be a second line center one day who can help carry a line. Like, again, it's early. It's just a couple games, but I'm talking the full picture of, you know, Traverse City and training camp and preseason. It's really hard not to be very satisfied with what we've seen from Brett Howden, and it makes it all the more better because Nemesnikov's been so disappointing, and Howden has kind of helped take some of the bad taste away from that that trade that sent McDonough and Miller to Tampa.
Yeah. Phil Kosher. Koher? He writes for the site. I should get his name right.
You brought him onto the site. I always was saying Coker.
Coker? What do you think of the idea of moving McQuaid to his offside to allow Tony D'Angelo a permanent role on the right? I don't mind that. McQuaid is the guy that I think is most likely to sit to get D'Angelo into the lineup. So I think that's the issue. Do you hear my daughter just cackling upstairs?
Yeah, she's... Yeah.
She loves, for whatever reason, bottles being made is like funny to her now.
Because she knows she's getting her way.
Yes.
She's winning.
She is winning.
Yeah, that's a tough call. I don't know. Like I said, McQuaid hasn't been the problem. The problem was always with Gorton and the decision to acquire him. And it's really important for us not to judge a player based on, like, oh, you shouldn't be in the first place. I hate that you're here. Like, that's fine. But, like, when Adam McQuaid plays well, you can't just say, oh, you know, he's a waste. It's like, when he's doing the job he was brought in to do, he should be commended for it. And I don't know, I feel like he's done what Quinn and the front office have expected him to do thus far. I'm not sure. Then again, D'Angelo has been so good. I mean, I know that McQuaid has something of a history of being able to play on the left side, which is great, you know, a lot like Brendan Smith. But again, it all comes down to that game of musical chairs, Joe. If the Rangers are only going to roll with 6D, if we move McQuaid to the left side, that means a guy who plays left side will come out of the lineup, right? And then who is that? Is that, you know, who are we taking out of the lineup is my point.
Yeah, that's the confusing part of all this. But there's really no wrong answer so long as it's not Pionk or, you know, Shattenkirk or Shea or Smith even. Final question.
But it's not going to be Mark Stahl, and that's the problem.
That is the problem. Sean, though we have a logjam of vets on defense, at what point do you think the front office says, screw it, and just pulls up some young gun from Hartford? I'm sure by the deadline, but could see it happening earlier. I can't see that happening, because who in Hartford do you want here? I couldn't even tell you the six defensemen in Hartford.
Well, yeah, it's the Lindgren isn't ready, and that's fine. Rob O'Gara shouldn't be up here.
Hayek, maybe?
Chris Bigris is not here yet. I think it's Bigris.
Is it Bigris? I think it is Bigris.
In the preseason, I think I heard it as Bigris or Bigris. I can't
remember. Like, Sean Day's not ready.
Yeah, Sean Day's not ready, and that's fine. Gilmore is a maybe, and then Hayek is the guy we'd probably most like to just reward him if he's playing well in Hartford. Like, if there's a bunch of injuries, he's the guy who'd be like, all right, here's a cup of coffee, kid. Like, that's the right way to go about it. But, and Gilmore, you know, he already has had that NHL experience. He's 25, and he's now transitioning in the minds of not just the front office, but also Rangers fans who were like, oh, he's a fun guy to watch. He can really skate. He's not a part of the future here. And that was kind of, that was written in stone once he had a very forgettable preseason, which included that awful turnover. And that's brutal that that's the way that shaked out. But the Rangers also added so many young defensemen. So that just, that's just kind of the breaks.
Them's the breaks.
Them's the breaks.
Patreon.com/blue
for a while. Yeah.
Sorry. Patreon.com/blueshirtbanter. Patreon.com/blueshirtbanter. Alex Gardner, Alexander Ricard, Armael Kistner, Andre Shikagov, Anthony Viola, Arch Williams, Bob Kawa, Chris B, Chris Habibi, Chuck Spidina.
Oh, hi, Chuck.
Did I get that right, Chuck? He's new. Dan Carozzi, Daniel DeGen, Danny Santiago, David L. Singer, Eric Cohn, Fancy Lawrence, Gabriel Vargas, 50, Grumpy Smokey, Igor Zetlovsky, James Dangles, John Reppy, Keith Franchillo, Matt Bader, Guy from Montana, Michael Silvers, Mike Offit, Robert Courtney, Stink Fleeman, Tall Guy Robert, Thomas Osa, Trevor Kempner, and Zachary Zetlin. Thank you all for donating.
I also want to say Eric Cohn always says nice things.
He does. Eric Cohn is awesome.
I like Eric Cohn.
He's the man. Well, thank you all for listening.
Have some asparagus, and it's going to be a long season, but it's going to be okay.
That's okay. Yeah, that's okay.
We have each other, and that'll guide us through.
We love you all.
We'll be each other's life.
We love the ones that donate to Patreon more. Patreon.com/blueshirtbanter.
Definitely love them more.
Definitely love them more. Definitely.